Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation. You're about to listen to the Dork Forest. Yeah, you know the websites, possibly. JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. The credits, of course, Mike Rickberg just sang and composed the Dork Forest theme song. He sang it with his girlfriend, Sarah. And he will sing the Mexican hat dance at the end of this program. Congratulations to Patrick Brady, who fixes the audio. He got married just very recently, and him and his girlfriend, now wife, Caitlin, I wish them all the happiness in the world, of course, but he fixes the audio. Very glamorous. And then Vilmos, he does the website, thejackiecation.com, which, by the way, is where you could find everything. Dorkforest.com and iTunes are where you can find the podcast and help yourself. And tdf.libsyn.com is where you can find the bonus track, unless you have the app for some reason, which I don't necessarily recommend the app. Even like I get a nickel per app, but I don't know. Anyway, June, the week of June 9th, I'm doing a lot of shows in Los Angeles because I'm taping At Midnight on Comedy Central, that game show with the Nerdist. There is one in the can, but that one's an emergency episode. So now I'm going to be on it for reals and it'll be exciting. That's June 11th. And then I will be in Florida with opening for Brian Regan the week of the 19th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd of June. And then the week after that, I'm going to Wyoming with Maria. So, I am all over the place. So, Los Angeles, Florida, Wyoming. Oh, don't forget, you can donate if you want. That is on the Dork Forest. And super fans, people have been super fanning it up. $100 a year. You could do that $8.33 a month. I have not made that easy. But I've had two people super fan me last month, and that was exciting. So, super fan is $100 a year. You get, I don't know, like you get in the mail like a just a thank you card. You don't really get anything. Or you could order stuff, and then you'd get stuff, and then you'd have $100 worth of stuff, like t-shirts and CDs. My new CD, This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux, is also a DVD. You could download it at allthingsrecords.com for $5, or you could buy a hard copy for $20 that has an extra. It's just a couple of minutes, but it's an extra scene. And then the CD is available on iTunes and Amazon, or you can order it on JackieCation.com, hard copy of that as well, for $20. I think you can get them all for $45, everything I've ever fucking produced. That's the scoop, folks. So let's get into it. Enjoy.
At RBC Wealth Management, social responsibility starts at the top. As a part of the Royal Bank of Canada, RBC has been recognized among the world's financial, social, and environmental corporate leaders. Our sense of responsibility extends to our reputation for putting clients' interests first. My personal commitment is to help you achieve your financial goals by also considering sustainable and responsible investing strategies. To learn more, visit www.darlacashin.com. RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC. Member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in Will Anderson's apartment. Will Anderson, I met you famously 10 years ago in Australia. You're an Australian comic. You're a podcaster. You got TOFOP. TOFOP?
TOFOP, T-O-F-O-P.
That's it.
Yep.
And you're at Will Anderson on Twitter?
At Will underscore Anderson. Will with one L.
Will with one L, yep. Underscore Anderson.
Yep.
Because your name's Anderson. So yep. There's going to be a lot of Andersons on Twitter. And
There's a thing. There is a Will Anderson who often sends me messages who's a musician.
Oh, yeah.
Has some success, but not like maybe a really successful musician. And he often just goes, look, you know what? You get a lot of compliments. He said, mostly you get a lot of compliments. He said, it's never that bad.
Okay.
He says, like, occasionally he gets, like, an angry, you know, missive or something that comes to him. But he seems to be fine with it.
Oh, fair enough. There's a woman who had my sister made an AOL account for me in 1989. And the woman who has it, Jackie, spelled correctly, will get emails from me sometimes, and she'll just forward them and go, "How's it going? I'm still in Boston, still working. How about you? You still working? Okay." And she just forwards them to me. It's really nice.
Yeah, this person has like a interest in my career.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think she's parallel to your career, so it's all working out.
Keeping an eye on me. But speaking of AOL, I still have a Yahoo Mail account.
Excellent.
And I think I'm the only one. I think even at Yahoo, they're like, "Please stop using this account." I think it's Yahoo that's sending me all the spam, and it gets hacked all the time.
Oh, does it?
And it sends all my friends like terrible links and stuff, and I want to stop using it, but I just...
Well, Gmail's the cool kid one now. But I've kept the AOL just because, my aunt knows what it is. And so it's...
Mine's even got a funny name. That's how long ago it was. Like, I probably shouldn't give out my email, but here we go. Who cares? It's email. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of Russian spam bots know it, so you guys can know it as well.
Right. Everyone can know
it. It is The Wilrus, THEWILRUS, The Wilrus at yahoo.com.
Yes, that is hilarious.
Yeah. And it was named, I remember this distinctly, it would have been 1998, because in 1999, it would have been 1997, because in 1998, I did a show called I Am The Wilrus at the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Oh, right. That's where we met. We met in Melbourne.
That's right.
And you are Australian, just so people know.
Yes.
And
g'day, mate.
And good day. It's all good.
Have a blooming onion. Things that we don't have in our country.
Exactly. No blooming onions. No dingoes are eating babies.
One. It happened once.
One time.
One dingo eats one baby.
And then you never eat then, the end
then of it. Forever you're the dingo
baby eating
country.
The country full of
a lot babies. Of good things have happened, and people don't mention those.
What you got? That giant rock in the middle of the country,
Uluru, formerly known as Ezrock.
Yeah. Did they go with an Aboriginal name?
Yep. They went back to his traditional name.
Well,
Uluru.
That was nice.
Yep.
That was nice of them.
In fact, you can tell a lot about an Australian, in a debate, particularly if it comes to how we treat our Indigenous people by what name they call Ezrock or Uluru.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they're still hanging on to Ezrock, it says something about them.
Who they voted for.
Yeah, they're making a real choice to call it Ezrock.
Right, right. Well, here's the crazy thing. I have because we're
and
talk
particularly
about...
if they climb it, you're not allowed to climb the rock either. You're allowed.
You used to.
So here's the thing. You're allowed to climb the rock. The traditional owners prefer that you don't climb the rock. So firstly, it's called Uluru because it's spiritual to them. It's like a religious thing. So it's essentially like climbing to the top of like a temple or whatever, right?
Yeah, it would be. It's a giant fucking rock.
Right.
And everybody around it... That's where they grew. They're like, no, it's our major landmark.
Yeah.
We're going to be interested in keeping that.
Oh, yeah. I'll meet you near the rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll meet
that you. That was what you'd. Hey, what should we measure direction from? That tiny little shrub over there that might burn in a bushfire or be eaten by a kangaroo or this giant rock that's been there
Hello
forever?
Hello and welcome to 1840.
Right.
Yes. I mean, So that. Yeah, so they don't do so. Do people respect it, or do they have? Please don't climb the rock. And then there's a guy to say, "No, seriously, please don't climb the rock."
Yeah, there's a one halfway up. So no, seriously, guys, this is really offensive.
Yeah, this is actually.
No, it's toward the top. Like, seriously, it's like you're pissing in my church. What are you doing? Why are you here?
Right. Why did you choose to do it?
Yeah,
and,
you're a horrible person.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
No,
there is a sign that says that they prefer that you don't climb the rock, and I think most people respect that, but not all people do.
Fair enough. And there's no dude. There's no dude at the bottom of the rock going, no, seriously.
There should be
like
at least,
a national park.
There should be at least one Indigenous dude just shaking his head.
Just going.
You just have to. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. They need a crying Aboriginal. They need one. Like, I mean, as a gig. I mean, I'm saying they should pay this guy
or
whatever.
Right, right. That would be steady work.
Or it could be like, I mean, as they say in the Christopher Nolan Batman series, in the olden times, the Romans would elect one person in times of trouble to maybe it could be a ceremonial spiritual thing. You could take your turn as being the crying person at the rock just to guilt foreigners into you've read the sign, but you're still going to climb it. Well, you have to climb past a weeping Aboriginal person.
Every time.
Right.
And by the way, there are nine things. Here's the thing. I had I had a hat with the Aboriginal
flag?
AFL team. Oh. The team that is that made only of Aboriginal AFL players.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The All-Indigenous team. Yeah.
The All-Indigenous. Sure. I had that hat. Couldn't find it. Was going to bring it.
Uh-huh.
But I was wearing it, and a guy on the airplane coming back from Sydney a couple of years ago said to me, "When are we going to be an Indigenous?" An Australian guy. Yeah. He's like, why can't some of the great guys, you know, we've been here like 300 years. Aren't we indigenous yet?
No.
And you're like, not ever.
No, not ever. You can't ever be.
Yeah. It turns out you were not part of the continental drift that brought a bunch of people there.
No. That.
That's a specific thing.
That horse has already bolted.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you can't become indigenous.
No.
You know, you remember those, you know, those people who are born again virgins? Not actually born again virgins. That's virgin. All in their head. You can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself.
Right. Right. And if you want to get 19 surgeries to look Aboriginal,
right,
that is also rude.
Yeah.
It's actually not okay.
Yeah.
Do you hear about that Brazilian guy who got 9 surgeries to make himself look Asian?
No.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, there was something on the, it was on the internet. It must have been true.
Yeah, it must have been true.
I think it was an anime.
Was
thing?
It under the headline, this article will change the way you look at Asian people or something?
Right, because he had bright blue eyes. He was clearly the grandchildren of Nazis. Uh-huh. Right? And so he was Brazilian, but he's a Brazilian dude, and he had 9 surgeries to look Asian, which is weird because all Japanese anime, everyone looks round-eyed.
Right.
So it's all completely fecocted. Everybody. But also, calm down weird, with what you look like.
But also the weird thing about that is, like, you know, Brazil is world famed for its plastic surgery.
Oh, that's right.
But they're not doing much to make people look Asian.
Right. Nobody's. That's a very unique thing.
Like, you're going, you want your breast bigger as well, though, right? Mm-hmm. No. I just want to look more Asian.
I just want to look more Asian.
Yeah, but you want me to have, like, you want to have, like, a
longer dick.
Yeah,
no?
You want to. No?
Okay. No? Not that?
No.
All right. You want to, can you fix my foot? They're like, no, we don't. It's only cosmetic.
This is,
and so we can't actually fix your foot.
Yeah, we can put a breast on your foot. Would you like a massive breast on your foot?
Have you always wanted a nipple on every appendage? Because we could do that hand nipple.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
how many nipples do you want? We've got a spare. We've got a jar of nipples. Seriously, you pick whatever nipples you want out of that jar. If you can guess how many nipples is in the jar, we'll give you them all for free.
All free nipples, all the time. Good times. Okay, so you have already brought up Batman, the movie.
Yeah.
You said in Batman, the Christopher Nolan Batman movie, there was a comment about what the Romans would elect somebody.
Yep.
What was that line? I have not memorized the Batman movies.
Well, they.
You might have.
Harvey Dent, I think, is the person who talks about it, and
Two Face.
Yes. Spoilers.
Hey, everyone dies in Game of Thrones. There are books.
Yeah. And also, there are earlier episodes of Game of Thrones that have established that everyone dies.
Everyone dies. Everyone dies. Winter is coming, it turns out. And you know what happens in winter? Everyone dies.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Christopher Nolan.
I think that's because everyone's worried about George R.R. Martin because they think that he's going to die before they finish the series. Right. But he's probably
very flattering, by the way.
He's probably just written the last, page. Oh. Everyone dies. Everyone else dies. What are the final words of Lord of the Rings? What are the final words of Game of Thrones? Everyone else dies.
Right. And in conclusion, death.
Whoever is left dies.
Right. That would be because it's so rude that they're like, then why make a TV show if the author isn't done with the series? I mean, I don't know if you read much of the.
I haven't read the Game of Thrones books, but I haven't read them for the reason that I've been enjoying the television series.
Oh, okay,
and I've been enjoying the surprise element of
nice.
It,
yeah,
and
yeah.
So I didn't want to. Like, when I finish
spoilers.
The TV series, I'll go.
Then you can go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of whatever I started first.
Okay.
Like, so if I'd started reading first, I would have, like, wanted to read them all, then see the movies.
Yes.
But because I hadn't started that way.
Yes.
Like, I actually have the first Game of Thrones book on the shelf here and had it for, like, 18 months and realized one day, no, I'm going to just keep
just
watching the TV
keep watching
series.
The show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then go, oh my God, he died?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's, But what, what in the Batman movie, what did the Romans used to do?
So they're talking about the idea, and it's thematic to the whole idea of that movie, which is about, you know, the White Knight or the Dark Knight to,
right.
you know, protect and like, you know, Harvey's the White Knight and sort of, you know, Batman's like, you know, the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
That, you know, and there's that speech by Commissioner Gordon at the end about like, you know, the idea that he can be the, you know, the person we need him to be, our Dark Knight, you know, that thing, right?
Oh, okay.
So early on in the movie, they talk about the idea of they're having I think it's in the dinner scene, I'm pretty sure.
Excellent.
You know, when the Harvey and Rachel and
Bruce Wayne,
are all out to dinner.
Okay.
And
I remember that. Yes.
And they talk about the idea of Batman and whether, and like Harvey Dent's defending Batman and, you know, saying he's a vigilante. Like, yeah, you know, saying, someone else says, well, isn't he a vigilante? And they talk about the idea of, in the Roman days, they used to elect, in times of trouble, they used to be elect one person
elect
to be
vigilante,
their,
hence yeah, the word
to
vigilante.
Be their protector. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yep.
Okay.
So that scene, I believe.
You might have remembered that scene from such times as the gajillion times you've seen the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Here is where we could talk about now. So Batman himself, yeah, right? His parents are killed as a child. Uh-huh. We're going to be reviewing the Batman
right
mythos.
And by the way, it's very interesting to me, because if you buy into the idea of, like, and we do this as, you know, as comedians, I always think if Batman hadn't become Batman, he would have had at least a really good hour of stand up. Cause that is the sort of stuff, you know what I mean? Like, he's got at least one really
good story.
Right.
There's a couple of ways. There's a couple of ways to go with all that trauma.
You can channel it into a lot of different things.
Exactly.
So he's a guy who's like, I need a cave. Some people are just like, I want to perform in a comedy club that is much like a cave.
Much like a cave.
Yeah.
It's got the good dank.
Right.
And
so he, that's his origin story. If you think about the idea that you enjoy Batman and then Batman was important for the world to fix the world,
right,
then you've got to, the man who killed Batman's parents is important to that story as anybody else.
Okay.
And so it gets to that idea, like it's your Judas role.
Okay.
You know, in that Judas needed to betray. Like,
otherwise,
you know,
we would never
otherwise,
get Jesus.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Doesn't happen otherwise.
That was explained to me in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Right.
Yeah, that's how I found out about it. Sadly, the Bible, not as clear.
Right.
Less singing, possibly. And, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So that's his, there. So that's your origin story. Batman's parents get killed.
Okay. So whatever happened to that guy? Did Batman kill him or did Batman arrest him? What did,
I think my understanding is that over the mythology of Batman, that there are different stories where, you know, that person's either, you know, very important or not important. I think in the original, in the Tim Burton movies, I think he was working for the Joker or something.
Oh,
there was some sort of him, or that the Joker was involved.
It was a little
or like,
too tidy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the thing is the fact that he's integral to creating Batman doesn't mean that guy just isn't a guy who happens to occasionally kill people.
Right.
Like, it wasn't a plan of his to create Jesus. He just happened to create Jesus.
Yeah, that's right.
Where in Jesus Christ Superstar, Judas was made aware that he had to create Jesus.
Yeah.
And so,
so when we do, when we do Batman Superstar. Yeah, that's right.
When will Batman Superstar be happening?
The Dark Knight Dances. When we do the Dark Knight Dances. Yeah, and in brackets, and sings.
Right. I think that the South Park guys should do it.
Yeah.
And, sure. But okay. So,
and so that whole, angle is explored in different ways, but I think, you know, random violence is like, I think it's that, you know, the origin story doesn't have to be the person in, you know, starting it doesn't need to know that they're the person starting it.
Right, right. Cause it's the ripple effect. You don't know that you're the stone.
Right.
You just are the stone. Uh-huh. So I have seen the first movie,
Batman Begins,
3 times.
Uh-huh.
I have seen the second movie 1 time.
Uh-huh.
And I have not seen the third movie.
Okay.
All right.
Well, now, that seems to be following a reasonable mathematic pattern.
Exactly.
If anything, have you seen it minus 1 or 2 times? I think that would be.
It has been offered to me, but I have not seen it. No, that has not happened.
Yep. Okay.
And so, because I would see it, but it was Heath Ledger scared the shit out of me.
Okay, interesting.
And because he did an excellent job, right? I mean,
well, the thing they always say about the Joker is that his jokes are not meant to be funny to anyone other than the Joker.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, the things that he says, he thinks are hilarious and everyone else finds demented and terrible.
Right.
And I think Heath Ledger, more than anybody, got that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I will say that,
and also they're the same person. Like, I mean, to me anyway, that story in particular, the Dark Knight story where you've got the three, you know, pillars, like you've got the Harvey Dent character, who's the one that they want to put forward as the White Knight, but eventually, you know, becomes the villain. You live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yep.
Die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become a villain.
Right.
Right. Which is the kind of central theme of that movie. You've got then your sort of Bruce Wayne, you know, Dark Knight having to, like, you know, pretend to be doing something that he shouldn't have done. But then you've got the Joker, who is essentially just the other side of Batman. Like, oh. I mean, but no, but I reckon the Batman and the Joker, they're two sides of the same coin. They're the same person. They just went different ways with it, you
okay,
know?
Okay, so something horrible happened to the Joker, and he decided to go mad.
Right.
And it feels like he actively decided to go mad, too. It was just like, I would like to, I knew a guy.
Well, so did Bruce Wayne, though. Like, dressing up as a giant bat and fighting crimes is going mad.
And choosing,
to go mad.
He's like, I'm going to go hang out in this well until I am no longer afraid of bats.
Yeah.
And crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is exactly. Maybe that's why. Because insanity makes me uncomfortable,
right.
It turns out. It doesn't feel controlled. So do you think Batman is controlled in these movies? Do you think that he is in control in these movies?
Well, I think that he tries to think that he's in control or that he's trying to get control. Whereas
he's trying
to
find a balance, right?
Like the Joker has that line about, like, you know, do I look like a man with a plan? I'm just a dog chasing a car. I wouldn't know what to do with it if I caught up to it, you know.
Oh, right, right.
Like, and it's, you know, or the Michael Caine line, you know, some men just want to watch the world burn. And that's what he's like. He's just like, well, I don't have a plan.
Right.
Like, I mean, I have lots of plans.
Right,
but...
right. Whatever's happening right in front of me is my plan. And so that is a guy who's very much living in the moment.
Yeah.
So Batman, he's working to try to keep control, right?
I think he's trying to get control of the city as well, you know, like, but constantly everything that they choose to do. And that's kind of the twist at the end of the second one, or the moral, like the kind of through line of the third one, the one you haven't seen, is the idea that all the things they decide at the end of the second movie, 8 years later, are the things that have fucked everything up. You know, everything that they thought they were doing, everything that they thought they were doing right.
We're fixing this.
Right.
We're correcting this. We're patching this.
Yeah.
All of it just falls apart.
Right.
Because you can't. Is that the?
Well, you can't, and you certainly can't by, you know, lying and manipulating and, like, you know.
Oh, right, and hiding and having a second life and all these things. Mm-hmm. Is that what sort of the message is?
And he kind of has to, like, get over being, like, because the thing about Batman is, Batman, like, in that universe at least, Batman can't just, like, keep going about being Batman. That's not the Batman story that, like, you're not going to have next week's Adventures of Batman. And, because in between, like, the Dark Knight and the Dark Knight Rises, 8 years have passed, and Bruce Wayne's just been, like, hanging out in his, like, millionaire's house, not being Batman.
Not being Batman.
No.
Oh.
It's a classic stand-up comedian thing where he's like, you know, like if it hasn't gone well, he's like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm quitting. I'm just going to stay at home.
Right. You're like, really, you're not secretly doing Tribble Runs and just sort of building character, just writing a new hour? No.
Nope.
No, I'm not.
No.
Is he working out or anything? Or is there a Rocky-like scene where he has to get back in shape?
It's a bit Rocky-like.
Okay.
There's some technology involved.
Oh, and there's tech?
Yeah. So there's some great technology moments in the third one. Like, because I don't mind. It's a comic book movie.
Right.
So I don't have any problem with
him. No, my suspension of disbelief, the switch is off.
Right.
When I walk in.
He's a man dressed as a giant bat fighting crimes.
Right.
Right?
You had me as a man dressed as a giant bat.
But my favorite thing about it is, like, he's apparently, like, hasn't been down to the bat cave for, like, 8 years, but he goes down and, like, all the technology's working perfectly, like all the computers and the technology. So that means, like, if you think about that, because you can't get a tech guy in to the bat cave.
No.
Right?
Alfred's got a...
So Alfred is clearly a computer genius.
Yes.
And for 8 years, based on no hope at all,
has been going
up there and updating it. Like, you can't have an iPhone for 8 months without updating it 3 times. And Alfred has, like, cutting-edge equipment down there. So Alfred is either a computer genius who is wasting his talents as a butler, or he's killing computer techs.
Right.
Because he's getting them out to install the thing.
It's a one-time gig.
Dispose of the bodies.
Exactly. And then there's just him throwing it down into the... Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
So at the end of the third movie, it's really, like... It's about that idea that he has to get to a place where he can stop being Batman. You know,
so he has to find closure. He has to find healing to some extent. He has to find a reason to live without being Batman.
Without being Batman, yeah.
And does he?
Well,
a spoiler.
That is a spoiler, but so at the end,
but it's an 8-year-old movie.
It's set up so that he will either die.
Okay.
Or he will, you know.
Become a supervillain.
No, escape. Like,
oh,
at the
escape.
End of the, like, so basically at the end of the movie. Is it
Lady and the Tiger kind of ending? Like, you don't know how it ends?
Oh, no, you know how it ends.
Oh, thank God.
Yep.
I hate the Lady and the Tiger. I'm just like.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
No, fuck that. I mean,
I'm happy to use my imagination about some things.
Yeah, totally.
You know.
Yeah, but tell me how the damn thing ends.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
is she a nice lady and she gives him the other lady, or is she a self-centered asshat and she makes him die on the with a tiger?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I know. Yeah. So, well, I'm glad there's closure. You don't need to tell me, but because that makes that movie much more interesting to me. What happened was, is I just didn't get to see it.
Right.
It's sort of like the third end of the Star Wars prequels. There wasn't a moment when someone said, "Hey, do you want to go see this movie?" And so I never went and saw it. And then I heard that it was the best of the three prequels.
Yes.
But who cares?
Which was, damned with faint praise.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, all right, I don't also need to do that. So, but this makes me more interested because nobody I know was going to see, I'm not much of a DC person, right? And I like.
No, I understand that. I think generally.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the Christopher Nolan trio of films, and not everybody likes the last one, by the way. There was a bit of like, it split people, but I thought it was great. Like, I am an unreserved fan of it. In fact, the more I watch it, it's like one of those movies, like where Tom Hardy is Bane. Like, they took essentially like a minor character, or like, you know, not a minor character, but
like a C-list bad guy.
And turned him into one of the most memorable movie villains of all time. Like, that performance is unreal. Like, what they did with the character, like, it was. And you're talking about a third film that was originally going to have Heath Ledger in it. So they didn't, when they first planned it out, the Joker was going to be in this third film, right?
Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, it was.
And they couldn't really recast after that.
That would have been
terrible idea.
Yeah.
It's like,
so, you know, there would have been at least one studio producer who's like, he's in makeup. Surely we can.
Oh yeah. 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 That would have not been a popular guy.
So it was the Heath Ledger thing. It was.
That made them have to make different choices.
Yeah. But the other thing about it was that was really interesting for me because I was never personally a fan of Heath Ledger's because he's an Australian actor, obviously. And, I had interviewed him once on radio when he was doing an Australian film called Ned Kelly.
That's the Robin Hood guy that they never shot in the legs.
Right.
Okay.
So, Ned Kelly was.
Because he was a Robin Hood guy, right? I mean, he was or Jesse James.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, he was a little bit psychopath.
Yeah, it wasn't just, he would certainly steal from the rich.
Yes.
How much of it he was then giving to the poor?
Mixed reviews.
Some.
And it was late 1800s, Ned Kelly?
I guess that's probably right.
Yeah, and
he was an Australian bush ranger, they called them. They were our kind of cowboys, I guess, or like, you know, that sort of, you know.
But he had a knight outfit. He had like a...
Well, he wore like, I mean, the most famous image of him is like, you know, of him with kind of a metal bucket on his head.
Yes.
Like, I mean, like, imagine...
And
if,
a breastplate, though.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Big breastplate and then like a kind of metal bucket head. Like with a mail slot. Deliver mail.
Right.
Right.
Right. And, but he didn't do anything about his legs because he was probably riding a horse.
He was riding a horse.
So he really couldn't protect his legs.
No. But he's our most famous and revered bushranger. He was hanged in Melbourne once. And there's a famous place you can go and visit where Ned Kelly was hanged. And
I went to that prison in Melbourne.
Right. Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
And in the interview they were like, you know, you realize people spent years in the room half the size of this table, and I was like, what's happening?
Yep.
And it was a revealing.
Yep.
Anyway, so he played Ned Kelly.
Heath Ledger played Ned Kelly.
Okay.
So now two people have played Ned Kelly over the years. They've made two Ned Kelly movies.
Okay.
The first one, very famous Australian, Mick Jagger.
Okay. I think I saw that was the one I saw.
Right.
Okay.
So Mick Jagger, yes, lead singer of the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger.
British.
Played Ned Kelly.
Not Australian.
In the first one.
Yep.
And the second one, directed by a guy called Gregor Jordan, I reckon his name is, and he made a great Australian film called Two Hands, which starred Heath Ledger and Rose Byrne, who some people might know. She's like a person who came over here, like, you know, she was in that latest Seth Rogen movie as his wife, and, you know, she was in Damages and a bunch of other things, really. And she's really great. And
they're a great Australian actor.
So Heath Ledger at the time was in his, like, you know, sort of painful actor period, you know, took himself very seriously.
My condolences. We were doing
breakfast radio on a radio station called Triple J, which is like a government youth radio station. So no advertising. You can swear on air. You can talk about what you want. We play alternative music. It was good. It was great. It was a really great time.
It was super open.
And we could say whatever we wanted, you know. It was fun. So we wouldn't really get people who were on the press tour. We'd only just get people in if we were interested in them.
Yeah.
But this production company had been bugging us for like weeks, just saying, you've got to get, like, you know, Heath Ledger on the show. And we're like, okay, great. We'd heard he was notoriously difficult, but we're like, no, if they're keen, maybe he's a fan of the show or whatever. Sure. Like, if they're keen to have him on, then we're keen to have him on, right?
Right.
So we're doing the interview, and it was like we'd taken him hostage. Like, you know, I thought he was going to hold up a newspaper and, you know, show what date it was. Like, we just couldn't get stuff out of him. And we're trying our best. We're being really polite. You know, it's not, you know,
it's radio.
Right?
You have to be plug
and
play.
And it's live radio. Live. You know, like, so it's not like, yeah. And so at one stage I could, you know, the only thing I could hear was people turning their radios off. I could actually hear that back through the radio.
Right, right.
It was, so I said, which I, look, is not the best joke that I've ever made in my life.
No, but you were in the moment.
I was in the moment.
Much like the Joker himself.
Right. And I said, so we were talking about the motivation of his character. So we're asking him respectful questions because we were thinking we just want to get something out of him, right?
Right. And if you're this big actor, this actor's actor, that would be a question you could answer.
Right. So he just goes, I just wanted to understand why Ned was so, I mean, angry. I mean, where did his rage come from? And I said, do you think it was because he had really bad hat hair? Now, not the best joke I've ever made in my life.
Just riffing.
But he wears a metal tin on his head. It's not, it's his famous thing. I haven't just.
Right. You're not saying something with no point of reference.
That is his thing. Right? He ranges the bush and he wears a metal bucket on his head.
Yes.
If you don't want people to talk about the fucking metal bucket, then don't wear a fucking metal bucket. No one else is wearing a metal bucket on their head. So, I say to him, I do think it's because he had really bad hat hair.
Yes.
Now, he said to me, well, that's not funny, is it, mate? And I said, well, I didn't see 10 things I hate about you twice, you cockhead. on the radio.
Boom.
That was our moment. Awesome. And so from then on, we had never got along. And when he was announced.
And you guys didn't get married because it was a romantic comedy.
Right.
Fantastic.
Because that had been on radio and because people remembered that. When we finished that radio show, it was one of the more requested like clips. People wanted to hear that because it was so awkward and so horrible. And so.
That's just gold.
When he was cast as the Joker, all my friends were like concerned for me. When it got announced, I didn't know what had been announced. So I just started getting messages from people going, are you okay? And I was like, does everyone know I'm dying or something?
Right.
And I haven't been told yet. Like, and it was because Heath Ledger had been cast as the Joker in the Batman films. And everyone was like, you know, they knew that I didn't get, and they thought it would ruin the films for me. I thought he was genius. I thought it was one of the best performances of all time.
You have always been a Batman fan.
Right.
And so that was where that came from. Uh-huh. It was so, everyone knew how much you loved Batman.
Yep.
That you received text messages because of the casting of the Joker in a film.
Yep.
That is some dorky awesomeness. That is good work, my
friend. Well, I'm going to like see that and raise that. Well, double it at least, which is I got the exact same messages, but many more of them because of like Twitter and the podcast and things like that.
Right.
When Ben Affleck was cast as Batman.
Oh.
Because people know that I have, and I'm not anti-Affleck, by the way.
Nope.
Like he's done some really good stuff. I have a theory on Ben Affleck, which is that he's the only person who knows how to direct Ben Affleck because you'll notice that his best performances are all in his own movies.
Very possible. I hope he's going to direct. I wish he would have directed Daredevil then.
Wow. So this is the exact place we're going to, Jackie Cation.
All right.
Which is that Daredevil, my favorite comic book character of all time.
Even more so than Batman.
Yeah. And that Daredevil movie, one of the worst films I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
Like it hurt me so much.
Right.
Like, and I watched both versions. I watched because someone told me that the director's version was like better.
Better.
Not much.
No. You know, Peter David's writing it now.
Yes.
And it's awesome. And he lives in San Francisco because he got disbarred. in New York. And I loved I'm a huge Daredevil fan because there's going to be a
Daredevil series.
A Daredevil series on Netflix? Is that where it's going to be?
Yep.
Well, that'll be neat.
I think so. I think that's the area for those. Like, I think the Daredevil's going to be good there. They're making that Gotham TV series.
Oh, right.
Like, of the younger, you know.
I heard Arrow is good. I heard, I haven't had a chance to watch it.
I wouldn't necessarily trust the person you're talking to about that. you are talking to somebody who watched all 10 series of Smallville and still isn't sure whether he liked it.
I had to call it a day after about series four.
If people make, shows about things that I already like, I will watch those shows.
Whether they're
good or not, I will watch them. I did not enjoy the latest Superman movie, and I've seen it 5 times, and I did not enjoy it.
And you did not enjoy it?
No.
Okay. So, what about books? Do you give an author one shot? Or, because I do that. I read 6 Terry Pratchett books before I liked Terry Pratchett.
Oh, okay. So I was going to say, you did get to the point where you liked?
Because
when I was sending you my list of things that I could be talking about the other day, that I considered saying Terry Pratchett. I didn't say it, but I was
Discworld.
Yeah. I've read all those books, every single one of them. I always use a gateway drug. Okay. I have a little Terry Pratchett gateway drug.
Oh, that is good to know, actually.
Good Omens. Have you read Good Omens?
That's what brought me to Terry. Right. Yeah, that's what brought me to Terry.
Okay,
Pratchett.
Well, that is the gate. So I'm right.
Yes.
Except that you already went there before me.
Right. Because I did Good Omens and then I did Discworld.
Right.
And it took me 6 Discworld.
Yeah. I think the thing, I reckon what I would do with the, like, if I was going to, because he certainly got better as it went on.
As did the Dresden File guy.
As do probably most of us. If you looked at our stand-up careers or whatever, do you know what I mean?
Like, everybody turns out it gets better at what they're doing. That plumber who started out 30 years ago, he's probably better at plumbing this year.
Right.
Anyway.
So you get, you know, your 10,000 hours or wherever way you want to put it.
Yeah.
So what you could do with those Terry Pratchett books, because they are all intertwined, but they're not really.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Like, stand alone.
They're of the same universe.
Yes.
And I think you could easily come in, like, you know, 6, 7, 8 books in. That's that great. What's Mort? The one about death? Is that what it is? That's like about 7 or 8 or 9. Like, that's in that spot where things started to get really funny.
Yes.
And that one doesn't really, it's not even in the rest of that universe much. It's more about, the kid who works for death. Am I saying it? Was it Mort?
I think.
I haven't read it for like 10
it's
years
the girl,
or whatever.
I think.
But,
and they keep traveling. So, it's his daughter or something.
Maybe that's what it is. It's a long time since I've dipped in, but and then you could go back and read the early ones later on as kind of like a prequel-y sort of thing.
His sarcasm and he got his silly sort of funny. He did hit a nice stride.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there was a point where that satire was, to me, as clever as Douglas Adams.
Right.
Like, you know, what he was doing at the peak of what he was doing.
Sometimes there is a window where if you don't read Douglas Adams, when you still appreciate sarcasm at that level, you may not enjoy The Hitchhiker's Guide. But I luckily was still a huge fan of sarcasm when I read Douglas Adams. So, but
it's amazing though, isn't it? That like you can read something, and I absolutely agree with this, by the way, and I think it's relevant in a lot of cases. Whereas if you read something as a kid or like at a time in your life where you loved that thing.
Yeah.
Like, and Good Omens is that book for me. Like, Good Omens is, I probably have read that book like, I'm going to say 15, 20 times, right?
Okay.
Because it's just one of those ones that if I want to have a break and I haven't read it for a while, it's like rewatching one of my favorite movies or whatever.
It's an easy read.
I just enjoy reading that book.
There's always a joke you haven't,
right?
You don't remember that you're like,
right? Yeah. But that is what it's like. And it's such a comfort book for me to be able to read.
When he threatens the plants, that's good times. Oh,
man, it's just,
that's comedy gold.
There's just a lot of funny stuff in that. But Terry Pratchett is a very interesting person. If people don't know him, he made a great documentary about euthanasia. Last year, because he has Alzheimer's disease and he wants to be able to, cause I mean, as you can imagine, somebody who's like, you know, I think he's the most, like, one of the, behind, like, J.K. Rowling or whatever, he's, like, the most successful British author of the last 20 years or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, he's sold an amazing amount of books and stuff.
True.
And, but a guy who had this brilliant mind to create all these, you know, things and then suddenly
not have access to it.
Like, so he made this amazing, like, documentary about, you know, the right to die. And he's just a really fascinating guy in general. So if people are kind of interested in him as a person.
Yeah, that'd be.
My favorite thing I always quote, it was the thing that used to be in the front of his books and I always enjoyed. And if anyone ever asked me about, like, you know, when if someone's having too serious a conversation about why people become comedians, I always quote, look, mostly because it's indoor work with no heavy lifting.
Yes.
Right.
That's why I went into comedy, so I didn't have to move chairs.
Right.
Whenever anyone asks me to move chairs, I'm like, no.
No, this no, is I why I...
This is why I went into stand-up comedy, is the no heavy lifting. Yes. And it's a, my what did I... I can't remember. Okay. So, but it was, cause I like the DC universe to some extent, but sometimes it's genuinely uncomfortable how insane all of the bad guys are.
Uh-huh.
And in the Marvel universe, the bad guys are often just motivated by things that I understand better, which mm-hmm. is greed and bad life choices or just falling into, you know, a set of bad characters. And, but did you see the new Spider-Man? The
Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Yeah.
No. And that's pretty unusual for me.
Right.
Because I went and saw the Green Lantern, so I'm just going to tell you, you know, where, right. how low my bar is.
Yeah, yeah. You were set. Available.
I saw the Green Lantern. I think the day it came out. I saw Hunger Games twice the day it came out. Although I love Hunger Games, I'm not. Oh. That's not a. Anti-Hunger
you know what?
I haven't
had a chance to see the movies. I've read all three books, but
The first movie's okay. The second movie is fantastic.
That's I hear the second movie just nailed it.
I thought they did a really, really good job.
Oh, cool!
And I love seeing kids kill other kids.
Well.
That's what I've discovered about myself. Any movie where a child kills another child,
that is just
I'm not into adults killing kids, but no. if a kid wants to kill another kid.
Because that's the last time it's okay.
Right.
The last time it's genuinely okay to punch somebody is when you're about 15.
Right.
And then when you're 18, you're like, no hitting in grown-up land.
No.
Yeah, now everyone will sue everybody else and you will be prosecuted.
Right.
But when you're 15, you can beat the shit out of somebody. Yeah. And it's, so Hunger Games, I loved the first book. I liked the second book, did not enjoy the third book.
Oh, interesting.
So it's interesting that the first movie is good, but the second movie is better. Because I wonder if they will be able to save that third movie and make it the book better.
Well, you know what they are doing, which probably is not a sense that they will save it. They're doing, they're splitting it.
Oh, criminy.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why, Santa? Why?
Money.
Well, that's right.
Greed.
Okay. Greed.
Reasons you can understand.
Right. Reasons I can comprehend, it turns out.
So I didn't see The Amazing Spider-Man 2 because I did not enjoy The Amazing Spider-Man at all. So I just was like, I can't do it.
It is unfortunate.
Because I knew it would just be the same as like the first. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it.
I'll tell you, Jamie Foxx nailed Electro.
Right.
That was my favorite thing.
But from what I read about like the, I feel like they just shortcut things. Like apparently he was really great in the character, but they shortcut the motivations of the character so quickly of him becoming a villain and why he's a villain. It's like, I like to have some motivation. I want to like know a little bit more
backstory, not just, that guy.
Right.
He was passed over and people stole his stuff. But it was, but I felt like the Bane thing. I wish I had seen the Bane Batman movie because then I could actually compare those two characters better because you said that it was sort of a C-level character and most of Spider-Man's villains. I mean, there's Doc Ock.
Yeah.
There's the Green
Goblin. But even at the best, like Doc Ock, I mean, in your pantheon of great villains, like that's what I always think with Spider-Man is like, I like Spider-Man.
Yep.
I really like Spider-Man. And, like, you know, there's been times in, like, the run of Spider-Man over the years where I've been, like, even really into the comic book and stuff.
Yeah.
And
there's a great series that is ongoing, but it was a great run. But, yeah.
Right. So, I get all that. But, like, I always think at the best of times, his villains have been, like, the shittiest thing about Spider-Man.
Yeah. It's the craziest thing about the Doc Ock thing is that, and I've mentioned this before on the Dork Forest, is that because they just finished what I consider to be the best run of Spider-Man since I was a kid. And I have not kept up with Spider-Man, so that is talking out of my ear.
Sure.
Anyway, but Doc Ock was dying.
Since you were a kid. All these sentences, I think this is what we should start going. As far as I know.
As far as I know.
As far as I know.
And based on no information besides what I have in my head.
Right.
I cannot. And so, but Doc Ock takes over Peter Parker's body. And they swap minds, essentially. And then Doc Ock dies. Doc Ock, who is an adult man. Oh, an adult madman. Mm-hmm. But an adult man looks at Peter Parker's life and goes, oh my God, this is a mess. And so what he does is he makes what is he calls a superior Spider-Man.
Right.
And so he gets Peter Parker his PhD. He gets he organizes Aunt May's life. He gets a girlfriend, a better girlfriend. He starts his own business. He but then of course he's Doc Ock, so he goes mad. And at one point, turns out he has 6 appendages. Much like Doc Ock. He turns into an 8-sided spider.
Spider.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he's got little spider bots that go over and look for crime. And he's a superior Spider-Man. But then, of course, he's Doc Ock, so he loses his mind. And then he, it's just, but it was such a great, it was written by Dan Slott.
Yeah.
And Dan Slott is continuing to write it because Peter Parker's back in his body now. But, and Peter Parker's like, wow, he's really, but he got his PhD in a thing that Doc Ock, in cybernetics,
right.
Not in what Peter Parker knows. Peter Parker doesn't know shit.
Right.
He's like, oh, I have a PhD in something I don't know anything about. Fantastic. Okay.
That's fun.
Yeah. And so, but, so I wish I had that Bane because it was, I like it, but it was good. So we are at, the little over the halfway mark. And I do want to talk about Australian rules football.
Okay.
Because the AFL league.
Yes.
It's essentially, I saw a game and it is essentially kill the guy with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And, it is the biggest game of kill the guy with the ball I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. And,
what game did you go to? Can you remember?
It was, I think it was, what is the beach team?
St. Kilda?
St. Kilda. Yeah. I went to a St. Kilda and Hawks game.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
And, so they,
was it at the MCG? Did you go to the MCG?
I went to the MCG. I had
the Melbourne Cricket Ground.
Right. I had a meat pie.
Yep.
That everyone was like, those are the worst meat pies in the world.
Yeah.
Said, even a shitty meat pie is better than the best meat pie I've had in America.
Oh, okay.
So,
interesting.
Really,
normally at the football, it's a bit of a tradition that the meat pie will be served scalding hot on the outside and almost frozen in the middle. Was that your experience?
No. Mine was cooked all the way through, but they did offer me a great deal of ketchup.
Sure.
Effort, they were like, you're going to want to kill the taste of this with some ketchup. And I was like, no, this will be fine.
And was it old-fashioned, which you still have here in a few places, was your old-fashioned squirty ketchup, or was it like in packages?
It was.
Can you remember? I know this is a detail that probably is.
It was squirty ketchup.
Squirty ketchup.
All nice if you get a side of ketchup. And I got the ketchup.
Tomato sauce. That's what it would have actually been, mate. Because Australia. It would have been, do you want some bloody tomato sauce?
Tomato sauce, which might have had a tomato involved in it.
Right.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
As opposed to ketchup, which is just all sugar.
Right.
And some red dye number 7 or whatever. So I saw that game and I was so fascinated by the game. I read a series called Specky McGee.
Yep.
Which you told me the name Lyons.
Gary Lyon.
Yep. L-Y-O-N.
Gary Lyon was the Melbourne Football Club.
Okay.
Who are, I think the oldest, they claim to be the oldest sporting organization in the world, but I think it's contested, but they're certainly amongst the oldest, sporting clubs in the entire world, the Melbourne Football Club, about 150 years old or something like that.
Okay.
And,
was that when footy was invented?
Yeah, yes. In fact, I think they were a club before footy was invented.
Okay.
I think there is actually technically they were a club because the myth about Australian rules footy is they were playing, soccer and somebody started lifting up the ball and kicking it in different directions. But it was kind of invented. It was actually invented as a sort of a winter sport for people who played cricket. So cricket was the big game in Australia. It was brought out from England and people played cricket in the summer.
Right.
And during the winter, they needed something to do to be fit.
Oh,
now
right.
In the northern states of Australia, if you like, particularly New South Wales and Queensland, they played rugby league.
Yeah.
Which is called a more international game. And if you went to a private school, you were more upper class, you played a game called rugby union.
Okay.
Now rugby union and rugby league are different games, but they have a lot in common as well. Right.
I didn't take the time to learn about rugby because it didn't have as much genuinely spectacular jumping off of each other, grabbing the ball out of the sky as footy does.
Right. Firstly, I would say footy too. So that's good. Good. Definitely footy.
Yeah.
Like if you're in, the great thing about Victoria where it started, the VFL.
Okay.
That's what it used to be. The AFL used to be the VFL.
And it stood for Victorian Football League.
Okay. So it was a suburban competition. So that's why teams are called St. Kilda and called Richmond and called Hawthorn.
Okay.
These are all inner suburbs of Melbourne.
Okay.
Like all the, the teams, it'd be the equivalent of being
Little
in
League
LA
and
just having just, that are
Thousand
West Hollywood. Yeah, that's right.
It's going to be a great Valley Village team.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. In the old days, you know, Collingwood would play Fitzroy. They're the suburbs next to each other, you
and
know, divided by a road, you know.
Yeah.
So that's where it all first started out, but then it grew to be a national competition. Now there's teams in every state, but for a while, Victorians played, you know, Australian rules football, and people from New South Wales, because it was like a rivalry thing, they played rugby league. And that was forever, you know, how it was.
Right.
And so there are still
people who care more about one than the other, obviously.
Yes.
Right?
And definitely, if you went to New South Wales or Queensland, even though both of those states, the Sydney Swans have been one of the most successful
teams. I looked for a hat, did not find a Sydney Swan baseball hat I like.
It's not a really terrifying name, the Swans.
Except for they are kind of brutal. They're no geese.
Right.
But
they used to be the South Melbourne Swans. So they were one of the teams that moved. So South Melbourne moved to Sydney to become the establishment team in Sydney.
Okay.
So, and Fitzroy moved to Brisbane. They became the Brisbane Lions. They used to be the Fitzroy Lions.
Okay.
So as it expanded, what happened is, like, you know, because
just took the team names and moved them franchise-wise.
It would be weird to have a national competition where they still kind of do. Where, like, most states have one or two teams, and in, like, Victoria, there's still, like, 10 teams.
Right.
Right?
It's definitely Victoria's game, right?
Everyone in Victoria would have an AFL team. It's the shortest hand conversation you can have with anyone in Victoria. You get into a cab, or whether you're talking to the Premier of the state, the easiest thing to talk about is... Yeah,
who's
footy.
Your team?
Yeah, who's your team? Who do you follow? What do you think of the footy?
Right, because I have several teams' hats.
Yes.
And I just, because I like the game so much, I just started buying, and I was wearing one of the hats, and I went into the coffee shop in Melbourne, and the guy goes, "Oh, you like the Hawks? I'm a big fan of the Hawks." And I said, I don't know anything about the Hawks. I just know I like the game." And he's like, "Well, that'll do." And he was
so
like,
Hawthorn, they won the premiership last year.
Okay.
They were and they have been a traditionally very successful club.
Okay.
But go on. No, please.
Oh, I was going to say, just so people know, let's talk about how many people are on each team and the four goalposts and the whole thing.
Okay. So, let's do our best.
Yeah.
It's played on an oval.
Yep.
So,
a big oval.
Yeah. And like three times the size of a soccer field, you know, like it's a
big
oval. The MCG where you enter the game holds 100,000 people, and on grand final day and on some of the bigger, like other sporting events during the day, some of the bigger games, it'll get, you know, 90 to 100,000 people in that stadium.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big sport. And, there are 18 players per side who are on the field, and there are four other players per side that are on like an interchange bench.
Okay.
But people can run on and off.
Anytime?
At any time.
Okay.
You don't need to have like, you know, you
like
just,
if there's 19 people on the field.
No, you're not allowed to have 19 on the field. I mean, as in like you have to kind of, if
you have to go down to 17 for a heartbeat and then up to 18.
They
again.
Can cross on the line.
Oh, they can. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
That's basically it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, technically, if there was 19 players on the field, you could call a head count, and I think it's a forfeit.
Okay.
So like, it has happened in like 150 years.
Right. People have dropped the ball and
right. It, it can happen, but it doesn't really happen. It's a 360 degree game. This is the thing that's important. Most games of football are played in lines.
Yeah.
You know, soccer, football, you know, the world game.
Yeah.
It has the offside rule, you know, you talk about like rugby or American football, you know, they are all played in lines.
Okay.
You know, one side's coming this way, the other side's running this way.
Right, it's
you
like
you can't
old
break
battles.
A line.
Yeah.
You know, it's very.
This is more like guerrilla warfare because it's coming from all sides.
All sides, no padding,
no
full
what?
Body, no padding at all.
Like, oh, no
one
padding.
No one plays.
You're wearing shorts, and the reason I found the difference between rugby and AFL was I was like, oh, the AFL thing that I like, they don't have any sleeves. And,
they wear sleeveless jerseys and little shorts in winter.
In the middle of winter, and 220-pound guys are throwing themselves against them.
Right.
Yeah.
And from all angles. You can get hit from all angles at all times. Like, that's, but the ball, like, you know, you have to either kick it.
Yep.
Or you have to hand pass it, which is like a,
like a volleyball.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You've got a clenched fist and you hit the ball. They're the two ways you're legally allowed to dispose of it. So
you're
meant
right,
to
kick it or
to handball it.
Handball it. And then you can also dribble it, right? You have to dribble
so
it.
So every 15 yards, I think it is, or 15 meters maybe it is, you have to bounce like the ball.
As you run towards the goal,
yep.
you have to bounce or you have to hand it off. Right,
that's right.
And it is shaped sort of like a football because it's not as
pointy on the ends.
Yeah, but it isn't
as
round.
An American football, but it's an oval shaped ball.
Yeah.
And a lot of the kickers in the American football are now Australians because
The punters.
Yeah, the punters. That's right. The specialist punters. A lot of them are ex-AFL players who at the end of their career when they can't do the physical stuff involved to play, they come over to America and become punters because they're such
and
good kicks.
And buy land. Yeah, yeah. Because there's a great deal more money in NFL than there is in NFL.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, because there's no money in
and
NFL,
they only
right?
have to kick every now and again.
Right, right. They kick four times a game or something, right?
The AFL is becoming pretty like professional now.
Is it?
But even the best players, even like Gary Ablett, who it's an interesting game because...
How do you spell Ablett?
Ablett, A-B-L-E-T-T, Ablett.
Okay.
His father, Gary Ablett, was regarded by many as the most naturally talented player ever to play the game.
Okay.
And he would certainly probably be if anyone made a list of the 10 best players who've ever played the game, probably the 5 best, he would normally be either on that list or in that conversation, you know.
Okay.
There's probably a couple of other guys in the history of the game. There was a guy called Lee Matthews who... And this is my favorite thing one of my favorite things about Australian rules football is that it's a game that suits all shapes and sizes. You have to be fit.
Yeah.
But there's roles for little people. Yeah. There's roles for big, tall people. Yeah. There's roles for like big, bulky people. Like, you know, there's different roles in the game. And so this guy, Lee Matthews, like if you see him these days, he's like this little portly, you know, guy with this like mustache, greatest player in the history of the game, as far as I'm concerned.
But like 5'4".
Yeah. Like tiny.
Okay. Yeah.
They used to call it, his nickname was Barney because he looked like Barney Rubble. Right. You know.
All right.
It's an amazing game. It can be played by great athletes or just people who are smart at playing the game.
Okay.
So Gary Ablett Sr. was the most talented player of his generation, but was a train wreck off the field. One of those classic old sort of, you know, much talent, didn't know what to do, has had quite a tragic life since then.
Oh, okay.
Had a son, Gary Ablett Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he first started playing in the AFL, everyone was like, people felt sorry for him because how do you go into
follow
a game?
That guy.
Like your name's the same.
Yeah.
Like he's named you the exact same thing as him and
it's
you have
George
to go and
Foreman.
Follow in his footsteps, right?
Yeah.
Gary Ablett Jr. is now the debate that is now like happening in the AFL has gone from about 2 years ago where the debate used to be, is Gary Ablett Jr. better than his father?
Yeah.
Now the debate is Gary Ablett Jr. the greatest player in the history of the game? And there would be a lot of people who would argue. It's incredible that we've had a game that's been played by thousands of people over 150 years.
Yeah.
And two of the greatest players of all time – father and son,
Ablett.
Both called Gary Ablett.
Everyone's just going to name their kid Gary Ablett.
Gary Ablett.
it's Johnson, but it's Gary Ablett Johnson.
Yeah.
Just I'm living in hope.
Right.
And so you bounce, you do it, and then there's two tall goalposts and two tiny ones on the ends.
That's right. So there's the scoring system is if you get it through the sticks in the middle, that is a goal, and that is 6 points.
Right.
And if you get it through either of the six sticks on the side of the main goal, so imagine like a – like, you know, tall posts of like an NFL, like, you know, where they would shoot to goal, but without the T-bar.
Yeah.
And then add two shorter posts on either side. If you get it through the middle ones, that's 6 points.
Yep.
And if you get it through the side ones, that's 1 point.
Right. So it goes long pole, short pole.
That's right.
And,
And there's a set of those at either end of the oval. So basically the idea is to, you know, kick it through your goals as many times as you can.
And can you handball it through or can you only kick it?
If you handball it through, it's a point, no matter which of the goals which ones it goes through. Anything off the hand through the goals or through the points is a point.
Okay. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And if it hits any of the posts, it's also a point.
Oh, it takes it from six to one.
Well, actually, if it hits the big post, it's a point. If it hits the small post, it's out of bounds because it goes to the one down from.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we're probably getting a little technical for people following along.
Oh, the minutiae is what the Dork Forest listeners enjoy.
Yeah.
And, the game, it's one of my favorite things is that you can touch, you can just grab people.
If they've got the ball, you can tackle them between the knees and the under the like the shoulders, like under the shoulders, like
under the shoulders to the knees.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, that's your kind of tackle zone where you can grab them. You can grab them if they've got the ball. You could used to be able to. They're getting a bit stricter on it now because of high head contact, accidental high head contact. But you also, if you were within 5 meters of the ball, you used to be able to bump a player, like even if he didn't have the ball.
Oh, really? Just kind of knock him off, off course?
And that was the best way to clean someone up because people would run, you know, run from like, you know, 50 yards away, line someone up, and if they're within five, like just – because you're not seeing that. You're looking at the ball in a different direction. Some dude just comes out of nowhere and smashes you.
Right.
In the old days, though, it was a lot more violent. In the old days, you were allowed to just like – I mean, people would just – punch each other and have fights and stuff.
You know, in 2005, when I was touring around Australia, I saw on the news a guy broke his cheekbone and the bone went through his eye socket.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they kept showing it on the news. Yeah. He didn't lose the eye and he didn't lose his sight, but they kept showing this frickin' bone sticking out of his eye. And I was like, stop showing.
Oh no, they love nothing more than that. Like the biggest injury, like, is people doing their knees because, as you can imagine, people like going for a ball on the ground at high speed. If anyone comes in underneath, you know, knees are going to go.
Yeah.
And they'll show that. I remember one famous incident, like at the SCG, the Sydney team, that this dude's kneecap had been dislocated and he was just lying there on the ground, smashing his, like, you know, trying to get it back in so he could get up and like go.
Oh my God,
and they've just got the camera on this guy putting himself through so much pain trying to smash his knee back.
Physicality of this thing, I picture it like a gladiator match because it's kill the guy with the ball.
They play 4 quarters. They play 20 minutes with time on. So most quarters go for about 30 minutes each. So it's a 2-hour game. Your elite runners, your midfielders will play. They'll run about 20 kilometers, which is like what 14 miles,
miles
or like
or
more.
12 miles,
12 or 12 or 13 miles. They'll run that a game. And your forwards, even your, like, might run like 10 to 12 kilometers, so like six miles or seven. It's very physical game. Like,
it's, I mean, possibly I enjoyed it because these were the best looking men I've ever seen in my life. Even
for athletes, they're good looking men. The body shape is right.
Ideal.
Yeah. You don't get that weird head thing or that no neck thing.
Right.
But they're clearly like.
They're completely in proportion.
Right.
Because they're streamlined.
Because you have to be strong, but you also have to be fast. And,
yeah.
You know.
It's the weirdest looking dudes. I mean, like, they look like Photoshop drawings of what men should look like.
Yeah.
Are there any women's players?
So, not in the.
In the league.
In the league, but they have a women's league. So that they have, and the AFL has been trying to be more inclusive of women. Like, I think like most like sports these days, but it has like an almost 50-50
fan base?
Audience base.
Yeah. Cause I met more as many women who were into it as men.
But insofar as the organisations themselves, so St Kilda, the team that you went and saw, they just became this last week before we talked, just became the first club in AFL history to appoint a female full-time coach.
Okay.
So that which has been something that has always been dominated by.
So there's never been any.
Not at the highest level, a female coach at that level.
Okay.
There's a female goal umpire, Chelsea Roffey, who was the first, like, female goal umpire in the
early
AFL.
Early days here with women trying to integrate into the game.
Into the actual game itself.
Yeah.
Like on boards and stuff, they had the first female president of a football club, Richmond this year, and certainly the AFL boards had women on it for a few years and like that sort of thing. But it's certainly the initial steps of that.
Yeah,
but I think, you know, it strikes me that it's been a game that accepted all those things pretty easily.
Yeah.
So it strikes me that, like, I think that now that they're all happening, it will just become very normal very quickly.
Allow me to make a sweeping statement.
Yes.
About the Australian people is that when you tell them that they're doing something, they're just like, well, we would like to integrate women into something.
Yes.
We think that that's racist. The worst comment you're going to get is just some tool bag going, well, fuck you. Fine. I mean, the whole thing is, I don't want to do this, but yes, all right, it'll be fine.
Right.
And the best will be, yeah, that makes sense. Or it'll go that gamut of, we should definitely do this to, yes, we should do this to, I don't want to do this. Why are you going to ruin my thing? But okay, we'll do this. Right. And,
well, in the old days, I think that was definitely true. I think these days, unfortunately, there's that extra, like,
Is there another level of guys who are just like, screw them?
Yeah, I think that I mean, one of the worst things that Australia has given to the world, and I apologize. It's not,
for your people.
I understand that, I don't want to be one of those people in life that, like, you know, some people are like, it wasn't me who did that to them. Why should I have to apologize? I don't know. It seems to make them feel better and it costs you nothing.
Nothing.
Isn't that enough of a reason?
Yeah.
I had nothing to do with this, but I apologize on behalf of my nation regardless.
Yes.
Rupert Murdoch.
Oh my God. So, that guy's a pestilence.
Rupert Murdoch, the formerly Australian Rupert Murdoch, now an American citizen.
Oh, sure.
Rupert Murdoch, what he did with Fox News over here has started to pollute the Australian media system as well. Like, the Rupert Murdoch papers in the last 10 or 15 years have become, you know, very gone down that Fox Newsy, like, you know, stirring up controversy, telling people that someone's coming to take whatever it is that you think you have.
Right, just making up a drama, do Skittles cause VD, find out it's 6 kind of situation where you, then you go.
I mean, I would watch that though. Just, right. I eat a lot of Skittles.
Right. And that they did not. And you were like, well, now I've ruined a half an hour, 45 minutes of my life.
Yeah. This brought to you by Skittles. So enjoy some Skittles.
Yeah, it is. It's, yeah, there's, yeah.
Then I just have some Fox News guy saying, I don't like the yellow Skittles.
Right, the yellow Skittles do, actually. Yeah. I'm not saying they do, but they do.
Right, and wink.
Wink, nudge. They don't, but.
Part of the problem is that there is a little bit more of that. But I still think in general.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think there's a lot about Australia that fears what it doesn't know, but then easily accepts things. And that's why I always feel like in Australia in particular, I'm disappointed when our leaders, I think the problem what's happened with the Australian political system in the last 10 or 15 years is that they are doing too much focus group driven stuff. They're asking people what they want them to say and do.
Right.
I think that Australians are terrible at telling people what they would say or do. I think if Australians are asked, Australians' first position is, why would we change it?
Right.
Things are great, right?
Nothing's broken.
But
would you?
I think that Australians, what they also do is, normally when we change things, we do really accept things so easily.
Right.
Like, my parents are from a very small country town. I grew up in a timber town, like
In Victoria?
In Victoria, okay. That's right. Little place called Hayfield was the biggest place near me, 1,200 people. But I grew up on the row that my dad was born on, 300 people in the whole
area
sort of thing.
There's a romance in that. Oh,
right.
Yeah, there is. Okay.
Yeah, so that's basically was the world I was from.
Yeah.
They got their first, openly gay couple, you know, in the town, came back to town, opened the best cafe in town. Well, the only real cafe in town. The
right.
only place you could get a decent cup of coffee in town.
Right. And they owned an espresso machine.
Has done more for gay relations in the country than 20 years of Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of those things that, like, it was like a talking point for a week and then just I can guarantee you that everyone in Hayfield is like, if we get, like, more good coffee, everyone should be gay.
That couple.
Do you have any gay friends you can bring in?
They seem perfectly normal,
right.
And they're really good at what they do.
Yeah.
So, I don't mind that. I think
they are very. I mean, I don't think Australia is a country where people like will hold on to a point past rational evidence to the contrary.
Right. Right. They may go in. Yeah, I mean, at worst case,
they might not start where you need them to start.
Right.
And that's why I think our leaders shouldn't be asking them what they think. They should be being progressive in the way that we all know we're meant to be going.
Right.
And then you'll find that people
catch up.
Right.
They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and there will be a couple of awkward moments where those are the good ones or it'll be fine. But then, you know, a half a year later, you're like, no, they're all fine. Who cares?
I mean, we've seen it in major sports in America with, like, you know, look, there was some negative, you know, feedback to Michael Sam, the gay footballer.
Right.
But in general,
nobody.
Didn't you kind of think that like a year from now, people just won't like it? And that doesn't mean that all that shit is fixed, but it is a nice sign that at least.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. I have a blog that I occasionally fix things. I fix sexism and then I was fixing loneliness last week. It was nice. I might take on poverty.
I would have thought that if you fix loneliness, you could probably fix a lot of sexism beforehand.
Which I think is where it stemmed from.
Right. Yeah.
There was some loneliness that led to some horribleness. And so I was like, well, here, fix loneliness.
Right.
And then it won't lead to horribleness because you will have someone to hang out with and canoodle with. Anyway, so.
It does seem like. and I understand what you're saying and not saying in that sentence.
Yeah.
But I do, I absolutely agree with you, which is that idea of we, and governments are so short-minded in these things because they don't realize the person that you cut off, like, you know, those benefits or whatever, is now the person in the street who didn't get their medication, who's like being weird and threatening towards you as you, or is the person, like, the person that we don't have the adequate, like, mental health things set up to identify who's in trouble or who's.
Yeah, they just want to keep their jobs. So they just are asking people, how can I keep my jobs? What would you like to hear me say that will make you not replace me?
Right.
Instead of just doing what they know to be the right thing, which is to just be nice to each other and help each other if they can.
And help the people.
And you can't fix everything.
No.
But you can make things slightly more tolerable.
At least try that. Or let's not make them worse. Let's start with not making them worse.
That's it. Not something not broken. Don't fuck it. Right. Don't break it. There. How about that? How about this? Let's do plugs and let's do a quick question about what's your team? What is your NFL team?
So, plugs, my podcast, TOFOP, TOFOP. Check that out. I have another podcast called Willosophy, which is like a less comedy podcast. Well-known people in Australia normally, but just interesting people, like people that I find interesting, who've had interesting careers and stuff. And I ask them if they have a philosophy and we just start, where that philosophy came from.
Okay.
And then we just talk generally out of that. It may be about their life, sometimes not about their life, I just like to know.
Is that on All Things Comedy as well?
No.
So TOFOP is on All Things Comedy, which is the network, the podcast network that we are both on. Everybody should go check out. There's a bunch of great podcasts over there.
Really is.
Some really shitty ones. What? No, that's not true.
Please listen them all and tell us which ones are which.
Exactly, right? And and then the other one, Willosophy?
Yeah, Willosophy.
Is it willosophy.com or do we just go to iTunes and go Willosophy one L?
If you go to iTunes and go Willosophy with one L or any other, if you type in Willosophy with one L,
it
will come up. You'll be able to find
it. Or Will Anderson Podcast Philosophy.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that? Why don't I link it too?
Right.
Why don't I do my job?
I don't know why we're teaching people how to use the internet. If they've managed to download this, I reckon they can work out how to find someone's podcast.
Somebody asked a friend of mine where she was playing someday and she wrote back, Google.com has all of the information.
Right. Yeah, you can find the link at Google.com.
Yes, exactly. You might be able to find all of the information. Anyway,
I barrack for a team called the Western Bulldogs, formerly Footscray. They were originally the Footscray Football Club, and on the back of their jersey, up on the back of the neck, they still have FFC, which is just to remember that. But they are the team of the Western suburbs in Melbourne, the working class suburbs.
Okay.
They are the worst performed team in the history of the competition.
Oh, excellent.
They've won one grand final, which is what we call our pennant or our Super Bowl or whatever. They've won one grand final.
When was that?
1954.
Oops.
Yeah.
They're the Red Sox.
They were in their only other grand final in 1961 when they lost to the Hawthorn Hawks.
Okay.
That was Hawthorn's first premiership they won. Was in 1961. Since then, I think they've won 12.
Wow.
So even though they've been a super team and they are one of the best teams in the competition, I loathe Hawthorn because,
I like the Bird. That's why I wear that hat all the time.
No, they're great. They're
the greatest logo.
They're a fantastic team.
Okay.
They have such a great song. We're a happy team at Hawthorn.
Oh my God,
we're the mighty fighting Hawks.
And the
we love our club and we play to win. Riding the bumps with a grin at Hawthorn. Come.
What's your team's? What's the Bulldogs?
It's not as good. It's a Sons of the West. Red, white, and blue will come out snarling, Bulldogs through and through.
Rah, rah, rah.
Yeah, that's seriously. Because they're all jaunty old, like that's what they're like.
They're sort of barbershop quartet songs.
The Richmond Tigers one is the big one. When the Richmond Tigers are up and about and there's like, 80,000 Richmond fans at the MCG, there's his ass, because they've got a big crowd bit in there. So it's like, there's his, we're from Tigerland, a fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. When we're behind, never mind, we're in Tigerland. A fighting fury, the final siren's gone. Like the Tigers of old, we're young and we're bold, or we're from Tiger. And then everyone yells out, yellow and black! The whole crowd
yells out
yellow and black. That's the moment, you know?
All right. It's so adorable in some ways, and yet so, because they also run through crepe paper, and they're these giant machines of humanity.
They giant crepe paper banners at the start, that the cheer squad put together still.
Yep.
And then they sing that song at the end.
And awesome. So
my team, the Western Bulldogs, formerly Footscray Football Club, only been in two grand finals, one 20 years before I was born and the other one 13 years before I was born. Oh, sorry, 40 years before I was born.
The worst.
Yeah. So 1954, this is how long ago it is. This is how I like to explain it to people. If I had missed that grand final and I wanted to see the replay of our premiership, I would have had to simply wait another 2 years until television came to Australia.
Wow.
That's how long ago it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Australia didn't have television until 1956.
Yeah, that's correct. For the Olympics.
For the Olympics.
Yep. The Melbourne Olympics.
So why still a fan? Because you didn't grow up in that neighborhood, right? So you're not barracking for them because it's a history of the – it's a geographic thing, right?
I loved them as a kid. I just, like, for whatever reason, I sympathize with them. I've always been a bit of an underdog.
Okay.
My family my broad family, like my cousins and that, they all, because my grandfather was a Collingwood fan.
Okay.
And Collingwood are the biggest sporting club in Australia. Most members, most successful.
Black and white?
Black and white.
Okay.
And I, for whatever reason, they always, you know what it, they felt like from Karate Kid.
Okay.
They felt like.
They're the underdog?
Yeah. The Bulldogs felt like Daniel-san.
Okay.
And they, the other guys felt like.
Right. Yeah, Cobra Kai.
That's what they were like. They were Cobra Kai.
You're like, I'm going to root for.
The underdog, Barrett. Right? Yeah. As it turns out, it's been 40 years of pain. I was doing an event for them the other night. They were very nice to, because I've done stuff for the club over the years, and they recently made me their second ever ambassador. I'm an ambassador of the club.
Excellent.
Their first ever was former Prime Minister of Australia, Julia Gillard. So, not bad. So I did a gig for them the other night, and it was a men's health event. They were doing an initiative to try to, like, you know, encourage better men's health for people in the western suburbs, right? And a lot of the players were there. And I did an impassioned plea to them saying that I was only keeping my health good so that I could see them win a grand final, but they had to meet me halfway. So I think I've got another 20 good years in me.
Right.
They have to play. Because I'm going to be like one of those Sox fans who, like, you know, that the week after they finally won and, like, everyone died.
Right.
Because the people are just holding on for that moment.
Right.
That's going to be me.
That's going to be you.
I'm going to be a head in a jar. Like,
you heard it here, folks. Yeah. You'll just be waiting for them to win.
Just waiting for them to win so I can die.
And did they commit? Did they recommit to the team?
They're not doing well this season. Somebody asked me, so I'm doing the LA Podcast Festival and it's grand final weekend.
Okay.
Right. So it's a different weekend than it previously has been. It's the final weekend of the AFL season, grand final weekend. Oh. And I normally go to the grand final, even though my club's never played, because it's just one of the greatest events of all time. So, my manager rang me and said, look, you know, it's the same weekend as, you know, the grand final. He said, do you think the Bulldogs are going to make the grand final? I said, let's do LA Podfest. I think we'll be fine.
I think it'll be fine.
I think we're pretty safe 6 months out to lock in that I will have nothing to do that weekend.
Yes. But what about, I do wonder about I had a question and now it's gone.
Now it's gone.
That's the way it goes.
Well, that's all right.
That'll happen. It's a podcast, people.
Right.
We are at.
Yeah, we're at time.
We're at time. It's good. We're a little over an hour, so it's perfect.
All right.
Will Anderson, you've done vital work. And Tofop at Will_Anderson, WIL. And there'll be links all over the place. Rangers, you've learned a lot about Batman. Mm. You've learned a lot about AFL. I've enjoyed all of it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?